Blog Talk Radio.
The baseball draft was conducted on Thursday, and we are here to wrap it up tonight. Pedro and Jabba have made two starts since their transition and their injuries, respectively. Dan Novick comes on to sum everything up. We have all that and more coming your way next on Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 46 of Sports Evan with Mark and Evan. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Brandolf, and we have a very special guest for you all tonight.
We most certainly do. Our Sports Heaven baseball expert, Dan Novick, is with us, and he's on the line with us right now, making his second appearance. You may remember him doing our fantasy baseball edition, and now he's here to talk about the actual baseball draft. So, Dan, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
It's not a problem. So I want to sum up the MLB draft, and we'll start with the top three overall picks, starting with the number one pick overall, drafted to the Tampa Bay Rays, Timothy Beckham. And he was drafted out of high school, Griffin High School. What do you know about him, Dan?
Well, Griffin High School is in Georgia, and Beckham's more of he's a very athletic type, like the Rays seem to have all over their team with Crawford and Upton and those kind of guys. Beckham's in that same mold, although he's a shortstop on like a lot of their top prospects. There was talk that they would go with a catcher, Buster Posey, out of Florida State, but they went. Beckham has much more upside than Posey, although Posey is a safer pick. Beckham profiles is like the old school kind of shortstop that hit 10 to 15 home runs. He has very good speed. He's a very good athlete. Fielding is his greatest strength, and he's almost definitely going to sign. He doesn't have outrageous demands.
Yeah, when do players typically sign after the draft? How long after the draft?
Well, the new deadline, which was instituted last year, is August 15th. So a lot of some of the top guys wait all the way to the end because they have incredibly high demands. They're asking for millions and millions of dollars. Beckham hasn't floated that kind of number in like the $7-8 million range. It's just like what the top guys got last year. He'll probably sign for about what baseball says he should sign for, which is about $3-4 million for the top pick. Out of high school, you can't really demand that much, especially when the team knows you're interested in signing.
Yeah, is he going to go to college? You know?
No, the first pick's almost. I'm pretty sure there hasn't ever been a first pick that went to college out of high school. Teams who, if they couldn't sign him, they wouldn't have drafted him. They've talked to him beforehand.
Yeah, now, do you think they made the right choice drafting him instead of the catcher?
If I were them, I wouldn't have drafted him just because in their minor league system is the infield, especially infield. They have a very good shortstop prospect already, although you don't really draft for need. But they don't have any notable catchers in their system, and they have a lot of young pitchers coming up that would have risen through the ranks of the minor leagues with Posey had they drafted him.
Mm-hmm. So is he that type of player that could make his way through the system quickly, or you know, do you have maybe how long he would be down there in the minors?
For the most part, high school hitters don't. There are rare exceptions like Jay Bruce and Justin Upton and Dalman Young, but that they still at least 2 years down the road. That's like the quickest he'd get there. I would say 3 to 4 because they'll have time for him to develop. They're not in a rush.
All right, so let's move on to the second pick overall. That was the Pirates. They selected Pedro Alvarez, who is a junior at Vanderbilt, third baseman. What do you know about him?
Alvarez has been a top prospect since he was in high school, and he has very high bonus demands. I believe his agent is Scott Boras, who is notorious for asking for a lot of money. He has incredible power. His swing, if you watch his swing, it's kind of the power created is kind of scary. But he does swing and miss a lot. He has very high strikeout rates, which is kind of scary if he doesn't fix the problem, because he might turn into an Adam Dunn kind of guy where he strikes out a ton but hits a lot of home runs. I'd say as if he turns out like the Pirates obviously expect, then he'll be a 30 to 35 home run kind of guy, batting close to 300, hopefully without a ton of strikeouts. And they're hoping he can stay at third, although that's not a sure thing. He might have to move to first.
And they also said that he was injured a lot of the year with a broken bone in
broken
his right hand.
Broken bone.
Yeah. Do you think that this is going to affect him at all in the next level?
I think if it was going to affect him, we would have seen it this year. He'd still hit for a lot of power this year and actually proved a lot of doubters wrong, striking out less than he had in the past. It's not one of those lingering injuries. It will heal. It's not like a torn rotator cuff or a pitcher or a hamstring. It was just a broken bone that he broke actually in his first at-bat of the season and missed a few weeks or months.
Now, is there any talk about him continuing his education at Vanderbilt as a senior?
No, there's no chance of that happening. He'll probably sign for over $5 million at least, and if he went back as a senior, he'd sign for less than that. He knows that his value is at its highest right now.
All right, and moving to the third pick, that was the Kansas City Royals. Eric Hosmer, I believe it's pronounced, first baseman out of high school. And what's the scoop on him?
His agent is also Scott Boras, and there were talks of him dropping because of bonus demands that he probably didn't deserve. There was talk earlier in the year of him asking for $10 million and a major league contract, which is absolutely ridiculous to give to a high school hitter. And he's very pull conscious. That's a worry about his swing. He doesn't hit to all fields. He might not hit for a high average, but he has incredible power for a high school hitter.
And there's no chance of him moving on to college?
The way the Royals have spent in the past, probably not. If they're not a cheap team when it comes to the draft.
Now, two out of the top three picks are straight out of college. Does this generally happen? Do you think this is smart of the teams drafting players straight out of high school?
In the past, it has. Before the last few years, I bet you most of the top 5 or 10 picks were high school. It's more in the past 5 years that it has been college. Now, you can't really draw a conclusion from the first three picks, but I think 21 of the first 30 picks in the draft were college. So it's not like the draft as a whole was slanted towards high school. It's just the first few picks.
Now, I just want to let all the fans out there listening, if you want to contact Dan Novick to talk about the Yankees and the Mets or the baseball draft during the show, you could call us, 718-508-9443. You could also talk in our Blog Talk Radio web chat or using AOL Instant Messenger, IM us at gmen1021-1780.
Well, now, generally, the draft, as a lot of people don't really follow the MLB draft as much as other sports, because it is so long, and even if a player gets drafted, it takes so long to get to the MLB. But for all you viewers that are not very familiar with the draft, there's 50 rounds in the draft. So that is an extremely long draft. You can be the 1,500th pick of the draft and still get signed by a team. And what percent of the people drafted usually get signed?
Get signed or make it to the major leagues?
Get signed.
I'm pretty sure the majority do get signed. The later rounds, they're generally just roster fillers to fill out the lower rungs of the minor league systems, just so they don't have 8 guys in the field or a 3-man pitching staff. The first round, I would say 90% of guys get signed. Teams rarely draft a player that they can't sign. In the middle rounds, some guys, it really depends on the team. And high school guys are often drafted late in the rounds, just a shot in the dark, see if they'll take the money and forgo college.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan. Well, go ahead, Evan.
Before we take our call, we have a caller waiting on the line. But one last question before we take our caller. Can you go, if you're drafted out of high school, can you sign and still go and still get a college degree?
Yeah, there actually is a relatively new system in place where players play in the summer leagues, and then they have the major league team will pay for their education. They take they have a specialized schedule. Colleges generally work with the teams. There was a player a few years ago who actually, I think he's in the White Sox system now, who actually went to Wharton School of Business as he was pitching in the minor leagues, which is probably pretty difficult to do.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have a caller for you, so you are on the line, 917 area code.
Hey, guys, what's going on? It's Quas from the Sports Doctor. I got two questions for you, Dan. I guess I'll start with the team I root for. You know, suffering Mets fans so far this year. I'm just wondering, you know, the Mets, of course, got Ike Davis. You know, it seems like this guy has some pretty good tools from Arizona State. I guess I want to know, like, what can the Mets expect from Ike Davis, and do you think how many years in the minor leagues before the Mets call him up and bring him into the majors?
Well, the Mets sometimes get a little screwy with how they develop their prospects. It seems like they figure out what they want a player to be, and they mold the player to that, and that doesn't always work. Now, they might try to make Ike Davis into a kind of power hitter, which will decrease his average. I think he'll be either a 30 home run hitter or a 300 hitter with 15 home runs. I don't think he can be both.
And he's
not like going to be a especially fast riser. He'll probably take the generally college picks take 3 years, 4 years.
And also, I just want to switch over to Evan's Tampa Bay Rays. I know he's a big Rays fan. Now, of course, the Rays, again, the first pick yet again with Beckham. I mean, obviously, the first pick is got to hold in high regard whoever gets the number one pick. But do you think that Beckham could be like another Upton or Carlos Pena-type presence in that Tampa Bay Rays lineup and make them an even more dangerous team for years to come?
Well, the consensus was that Beckham is the best talent in the draft. He's obviously not the closest to the major leagues because there are other guys picked from college that are just older than him. But he definitely has superstar potential. He's not going to be like Payne where he's going to hit 40 home runs. He'll be like probably like a Carl Crawford kind of player with a little more power. He's an all-star. He's not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion.
Okay, thanks so much for taking my call, and nice stuff there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Quas.
No problem.
But you say he's an all-star, not a Hall of Famer, but how can you tell? He's 17 or 18 years old.
Right, that's always, I mean, he could hit 150 in single A next year, for all I know. But the way that people view him, he has like a line drive swing which won't hit 30 home runs, and he has very good speed, but he's not Ricky Henderson. He's going to hit for average, but he's not Ichiro. He's very good in a lot of areas. He's not especially great in any single one except maybe fielding.
Now, I also want to let the fans know before we continue that the last time Dan was on, he did the Fantasy Baseball Special, and the power went out here in the Sports Heaven Studios. And
my power just went out also.
The show continued. Now, my power is not out yet, but there are thunderstorms in the area. There are thunderstorms in the area, so if the power goes out, bear with us. But usually the power at Sports Heaven Studios only goes out when it's sunny, so we'll see what happens. So far, so good.
But the show will go on.
The show will go on. Now, I wanted to talk specifically about the New York Mets, and I know you just took the call about, you know, Isaac or Ike Davis. Is there anything that you have to add to that, or did you pretty much get everything out?
That was pretty much everything, I guess.
And he's not going to continue at Arizona State? He'll probably sign?
No. In this draft, it's pretty much that everyone's going to sign from the top 30.
Yeah, Mark, I think we established pretty well now that every single person is
I like to
continue.
Know, I mean, everybody's different, so I like to know if they're going to sign or not. I mean,
but he's given the same answer every time in this draft. No,
well,
Ike Davis
was signed by the Rays in 2005, and he didn't sign, and now he was drafted again, this time by the Mets. So he's actually had a history of not signing, so I wanted to see if...
Yeah, but the last time he was drafted was in the 19th round. He went, and now straight out of high school, he went to college to get a better pick, and now once he reached the 18th pick of the draft, then now he's going to sign.
All right, so let's move on to the second pick that the Mets took, which is David Havens, Jr. out of South Carolina. And what do you know about him?
Well, his name is David E., but he goes by Reese. He's a he plays shortstop in college, but that he's not going to stay there as a pro for at least in the future. He might stay there for the time being. He doesn't have the range to play there. He's more of a second baseman or a third baseman. He's a good all-around hitter. He's probably the prototypical second baseman. Not like a, you know, he's a like a 290, 15 homer, 10 steals kind of guy. In fantasy, he would be kind of filling up all the categories, but not carrying you in any one. He's a very safe pick. He's a very all-around hitter.
Now, would he be better suited later on as, like, trade bait? You know, because with Jose Reyes there, you know, I don't know if we'll see David Havens very soon or Reese.
Well, they may bring him up as a second baseman or a third baseman like that.
Yeah, he's not – they didn't – when they draft him, he's not seen as a – they don't see him as a shortstop in the future, at least from what I think.
And the third pick overall that the Mets took was Bradley Holt, who's a junior from – UNC Wilmington, right-handed pitcher, and what do you know about him?
Well, he's extremely raw. It wouldn't surprise me if he held out for a lot of money and then went back to school. I thought he was an overdraft at that point. They could have got him later. He has a good arm. He throws in the low 90s, like 92 to 94, but he doesn't have any secondary pitches. If he can't work on a slider or a curve or a change, then he's not getting past Double-A.
So overall, what are your opinions on the first three picks for the Mets?
I thought they had one of the better drafts. They didn't go with a lot of high-ceiling talent. They went to fill up the farm system with pretty good prospects. They really can't afford to miss on another prospect again, because they depleted their farm system with trades this year. Obviously, they traded a lot of top guys for Santana.
Yeah.
So they need to have guys in different areas that they feel have a very high chance of succeeding.
And I know that you know a little bit about Javier Rodriguez as well, the Mets' fourth pick. He was drafted out of high school as well. So, well, he was the first of the four that was drafted out of high school for the Mets. So what do you know about him?
Oh, he's actually drafted out of Puerto Rico, which is relatively rare. The draft extends to the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico. He's a high school player. He fits the same mold as the other guys. He doesn't have one standout tool. He's a good all-around player. Has above average speed, average power, average hitting skills. He's what people call a baseball player.
Now, how many teams does each professional team have in the farm system? We all know about AAA, AA, and then there's a few single A.
Dad, check your email.
But they have most people. Most times when you hear about a prospect, he's in either AAA or AA. And then they have what's called high A, low A, and a short season ball. And then there's several Dominican leagues and Gulf Coast leagues, stuff like that. So, for example, there are varying amounts of teams for each organization. Yankees have single A, AAA, AA. Then there's three leagues, the short season one, which is where most of the guys from the draft go. And then full season low A, and then they have about three or four more. So that's, I think, seven or eight, if I counted right.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally where most organizations have.
Huh.
A lot of those are filled up with international signees from Dominican Republic and Mexico and places like that.
So then why would someone go into the league like that the Ducks are in? What happens when are those just players that never get drafted? Or
The Ducks are not affiliated with anyone. I'm not sure which independent league they're in, but they don't have an organization that can just call up a player from the Ducks. They would have to be signed away from the Ducks, which obviously they would.
Dan Geis, who the Yankees just called up, he was in the independent league from some independent league, and the Yankees signed him, right? Somebody scouted him.
They signed him maybe early in his career. He was in independent league, but they signed him this year from the Giants organization.
Yeah,
he's been in AAA for a while. You might be thinking of Scott Patterson.
And then there's some players that went down from the majors to the independent league, like Carl Everett and Algardo Alfonso are on the Ducks now.
Yeah, well, we've seen a little bit of Scott Patterson this year. I think he only pitched one inning in the major leagues. And Eduard Ramirez, they were both signed out of independent leagues. I believe the Yankees didn't even see them before they signed them. They just saw the numbers and said, here's a contract.
Interesting. So what you're saying is some players that are signed out of the draft, let's say the Yankees sign someone out of the draft, they can just send someone to the Dominican Republic to play a season there?
If they're signed out of the draft, then no, they're not sent there. Well, they could, but I think it'd be pretty pointless to do that because that would be the Dominican leagues are generally lower level than our American high schools. Those are for like 16, 17-year-old kids. Where a guy is signed, even if he's signed in like the 40th round, he would go to a short season league or extended spring training, which is just instructional leagues.
Oh, I did not know that the Dominican leagues were 16 and 17-year-old kids. That's kind of intriguing, I guess.
I went to a Dominican Republic game. I think it was the Athletics Farm System and another team. They did not look like 16 and 17-year-olds.
They pretty much are, unless they're... Well, they could be 14-year-olds that look 20, I don't know. But their major league teams have academies in those countries, in the Dominican Republic, where they sign these guys right when they turn 16, sometimes earlier, although that's illegal, but it's kind of under the table.
It's very interesting.
They're there for a few years till they come to the States.
Yeah, so players like Manny Ramirez and all the top players that are from the Dominican Republic, they were scouted from
Manny was actually from Queens. But Vlad was at baseball academies, and Santana was.
I think Vladimir Guerrero.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and before we move on to the Yankees, Dan, I just want to let you know that you're getting very positive feedback in our chat room, so just thought I'd throw that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually one more draft pick I want to talk about. Who?
Go ahead.
Keep an eye on. It's it's the Yankees' second round pick. Was a righty from Mississippi, and Scott Biddle, who's tell me if you heard this before. He throws a cutter almost 85% of the time.
Mariano.
Yes, like Mariano Rivera. Although he doesn't throw it as hard. He's just in college. He's considered one of the best relievers in the country. He's a strikeout machine. He's like in a different organization, you could see him as soon as September. That's how quickly he can move. With the Yankees, because they have a lot of relievers in the system, you could see him sometime, maybe even as early as next May.
That'd be great. Yankees could certainly use something in the bullpen.
Yeah.
How many innings can he go?
He's generally just like a seventh or eighth inning guy. In college, he would go 1 to 2 inning stints. He's not a specialist. As a sophomore, he was a long reliever, starter. He did like an everything kind of guy, so he can do a lot of things.
Now, when the Yankees moved Jabba into the starting rotation, do you think that they had the draft in mind at all?
No, they can't. You can't think that far into the future because the draft, the first round pick, Gerrit Cole, as at the earliest, that's 3 to 4 years away. So I mean, you have no idea what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years. You can't think about that when you're drafting.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Garrett Cole, the first pick, and what's the scoop on him? He's a high school player, right-handed pitcher.
Yeah, he's from Southern California. He was actually committed to the same college that Phil Hughes was committed to before he signed with the Yankees. Cole throws very hard. He throws 95, 96, and popping out like 97 miles an hour. He doesn't have great breaking pitches. They're considered average, maybe slightly above average, and he has a pretty good changeup, which he can use as a strikeout pitch more than just a show-me pitch.
So how quickly do you think he can make his way through the system?
He's not especially polished. He doesn't have incredible control. Like, he's not going to move as quickly as Phil Hughes did, and he's not as polished as, like, Rick Porcello was last year, who was a draftee of the Tigers. I would say about average 3 to 4, maybe 5 years at the most. If he makes it, he'll be there within 5 years.
And the second, he'll definitely sign, of course, just like all the others, right?
Well, Cole's agent is Boris, so there's a and he's a high school pitcher, so there's a chance he might go to college. Boris does tend to say that his clients are going to college, and unless they get like $20 million, I mean, I think he will sign just because the Yankees are willing to pony up money.
I guess they could use a starting pitcher or some type of a pitcher.
Yes. Anyone who can get out.
And of course you spoke about Biddle, who's a pitcher as well, their third round pick, and their second round pick, also a pitcher, a lefty, Jeremy Blake. He's a junior at Stanford. Mike Messina went to Stanford, I think, also. So what's the scoop on Jeremy?
Jeremy Blake was actually, he was the supplemental pick, so technically he was a second pick, but it's like round 1A. The Yankees were kind of, if you were following around on draft day, the Yankees were kind of blasted for taking him. He was the 42nd pick in the draft, but he wasn't even ranked in Baseball America's top 100 prospects. So it was kind of a reach. He would have been available later. Although, if you read about him with the, like, Stanford newspapers, that kind of thing, he had elbow problems earlier in the year, which were kind of hurting his stats, and he eventually got over it, and since then, he's been dominant. He's kind of built in the Andy Pettit mold of the low 90s fastball, pretty good curve, pretty good changeup, and he's obviously a lefty.
So what did the Yankees see in him that he wasn't even the top 100 prospects, but yet the Yankees drafted him the 44th pick of their draft?
Well, as I said, I think he was a reach. The Yankees system, I think they drafted him for need. They really don't have any notable lefty starting prospects in their system. They have a very good pitching in the system, but it's all righties. So I think they were trying to fill that, although I don't think they should have filled it with him so soon.
There were no other lefty prospects available then that would have been better suited for the spot?
At that point, if they were going to get a lefty, it would have been at a high school. I don't know if they were comfortable taking two high school pitchers with the first two picks.
Now, I'm kind of intrigued by the fourth pick that the Yankees took, which was David Adams, who's a second baseman. And I mean, he could take. I'm a little confused. Dan and I are IMing a little bit, and he's mentioning something about Brett Marshall. Who is Brett Marshall?
Well, Brett Marshall was the sixth round pick. I can get to him after if you want to.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about David Adams, and obviously, you know, I don't know how long it'll take him to develop or whatever, but he's a second baseman, junior at the University of Virginia, and of course the Yankees have Robinson Cano, who's a very young and second baseman, very good, this year struggling a little bit, but what's the scoop on David Adams? What's the reasoning behind that pick?
Well, I don't really agree with the Adams pick. He's more of a safe pick. They know he's going to sign. He's not very high upside. He's not going to hit more than 15 home runs, 20 home. I mean, which is good for a second baseman. But he's not a superstar at second base.
And do you think that the reason they signed a second baseman is because you hear about Cano, and a lot of people say he could be great, but at the same time, he could just as easily be horrible just because of his attitude?
Yeah, I mean, you could see this as an emergency plan if Cano drops off in a few years, but if Cano is as good as he was the last few years, then Adams isn't good enough to take over his spot. He's not good enough to overtake Cano as a starting second baseman.
And you're listening to Sports 7 with Mark and Evan. Our baseball expert, Dan Novick, is with us to talk about the draft. We'll deviate from the draft a little later on, very soon, actually. And the next pick that the Yankees took was a shortstop. And, of course, the Yankees have Jeter, but he's in his 30s. High school player, Franklin High School in Tennessee. It's Corbin Joseph, and what do you know about him?
He's another kind of David Adams kind of guy. He's not very exciting. You can't really take high school statistics as they're not as reliable as college numbers. So you don't really know what kind of hitter he is against higher level competition. He's big. He's tall and skinny, so they think he can fill out his frame and hit some home runs, like more than he does now in high school. There isn't really anything special about him, in my opinion.
And the same
really goes for Chris Smith, which is their next pick after Corbin Joseph. Although he's an outfielder, so I guess if they're taking a high school outfielder, they feel that Smith can hit for more power and just to justify him staying in left field.
That's interesting because actually Corbin Joseph, who you said, you know, tall and thin, he's 6 feet, 168 pounds, and Christopher Smith is 6 feet, and they don't even list his weight. So,
yeah.
I don't understand the reasoning behind that, but you also said you're willing to, you know, a little bit about Brett Marshall, the 200th pick overall. That's another pitcher that the Yankees took, right-hander, also out of high school. So what's the background on him?
Yeah. Marshall, I think, was a very good pick. I think talent-wise, he's better than their previous three picks before that, but there's no guarantee that Marshall's going to sign. He has a letter of intent to play for Rice next year, which is a baseball powerhouse, and his dad actually pretty much said that he's going to sign for nothing less than $1 million. And as a junior last year in high school, he was throwing 87 because he's new to pitching, and then this year, miraculously, he's up to 93, 94. He said he hit 97 in the first game of the season. So the Yankees are intrigued by him, and obviously they're not alone in because he's committed to Rice.
So he's definitely showing a work ethic also, and that's very promising also.
Yeah.
He'll be
difficult to sign. He's one of the Yankees' typical draft him late and just throw a bunch of money at him, see what they do kind of guy.
So what are your opinions on the Yankees' draft overall?
Yankees' draft is okay. It wasn't as great as it was 2005 when they drafted Chamberlain and Kennedy and McAllister and all of them. Like, half their top 10 prospects are from that 05 draft. This one isn't as good as it was, as good as that one. But
overall, was this draft a good draft with a lot of skill, or was it lacking some skill?
It's a good mix. It has some high upside with Cole and Marshall, and it has Biddle, who can be there. He can be in major leagues very soon, and it has some average hitters with Adams and Corbin Joseph. I think it was okay. It wasn't amazing, but there isn't a whole lot you can do with the 28th pick in the draft.
So now, who's your prediction to be the biggest star out of this draft?
Star, I think. Well, Alvarez, I think, is closest and highest, has the highest upside. Pedro Alvarez from Vanderbilt, even because he's from college. And he has among the highest upside in the draft, even though I think the strikeouts might be a problem. I think he has the highest ability, highest percentage of chance of being an all-star.
And what are your overall thoughts on the Mets draft?
Mets draft is very good. They had two first-round picks in Davis and Havens, which obviously helps having two of the best top 30. They didn't get a whole lot of high upside, but they filled a lot of needs in their system, which was lacking from the Santana trades and from getting rid of Millage.
All right, so that pretty much sums up the baseball draft, and Dan will stick with us to talk, the current stuff, Yankees and Mets. Mets just got swept by the Padres. That was just awful. The Yankees have been playing some very long and miraculous games. You had the walk-off by Damon yesterday and the Giambi home run on Thursday, I believe it was. But before we do that, I want to take a commercial break. And if you want to say something to Dan during the commercial break, you could IM us, gmen10211780, if you have a Blog Talk Radio account, talk in the Blog Talk Radio web chat. Or you could call us, 718-508-9443, so we'll get all your comments lined up.
Are you listening?
And we will be right back.
Wire Sports Center with Mark and Evan, the best sports radio show for you to tune into. We've had Newsday sports writer Jim Bambach on our show.
The baseball season is so long, and then it's long enough where you can play so poorly for, we're not talking, 2 weeks here. They were playing poorly for over a month.
NHL.com's Evan Grossman has been on our show.
This is the worst, this unstoppable force that everybody thought they were after winning all the Rangers. And then the Rangers were actually a little bit better against them than the Islanders were. They weren't quite as physical, and I don't think the Rangers' defense is going to be under them. But
we have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Post, Mark Hale, on our show.
The Mets not just being a good team or a competitive team, but the Mets being consistently over the last year and a half one of the two or three best teams in baseball.
And, of course, we've had New York Rangers radio broadcaster and Fox announcer Kenny Albert on our show.
Back-to-back-to-back, Ramirez, Rubio, Veritek, off the rookie Chase Wright, who's making only his second career start. Four consecutive Red Sox home runs in the third inning.
We have even had NBC sports anchor Bruce Beck on our show.
And now the guy that was the stable guy, Mark and Evan, is gone, Joe Torre. And now it looks again like there's a big Steinbrenner, who's running the show, and that's Hank. And I think he's the guy that's got his dad's personality in terms of a little bit of a temper, and who knows what's going to happen here with all these free agents.
In addition, we've had Yankees beat writer for MLB.com, Brian Hoke, on our show.
If the Yankees falter like they did in the first half, I could see a real situation where they're in third or even as low as fourth. Probably not fourth, but I could see a situation where the Yankees finish in third place.
And the list just continues on. We have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Daily News, Adam Rubin, on our show.
I don't think they're a lock by any stretch. I think they're certainly the favorite in the NL East. Certainly injuries can undermine the Mets, and they're the oldest team in baseball, so it's certainly susceptible to that.
And it doesn't end there. We have also had New York Jets cornerback Darrell Revis on our show.
So, overall, how satisfied are you in the way that you played your rookie season?
I'm not, frankly. My uncle is my biggest critic. And the year has passed, and it's a new year. It's a lot of more things that when I look back on film, I could have did better. And now this is my second year to overcome that and do a lot of more positive things in my game.
You're listening to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. It's the best sports radio show the internet can handle.
Okay, welcome back to the show. About 40 plus minutes remaining. 20 plus minutes remaining. So let's talk about what's going on right now with the Yankees and Mets. Move away from the draft. Dan Novak still with us, and again, feel free to contact us if you'd like. So let's start off with the New York Mets, who just got swept by the San Diego Padres, and they have been struggling as of late. It looked pretty good in the first inning. At least offensively, Carlos Delgado had a triple, and I believe then Pedro gave up three runs in the first inning, and he gave up another run in the second inning. But really not a good job. But, Dan, what do you think? You know, Pedro obviously coming back from a long injury. How would you rate his first two starts back?
Well, it's good that he settled in after that first inning. He only gave up one run after that in the following four innings. He got a little unlucky. He gave up 10 hits, but had four strikeouts. It's good that he also had no walks. But the main thing you look for is him not tiring out. If he starts to get wild, fly open, you know, throwing a lot of balls, then that's not a good thing, and it might be another sign. It might be another cause of injury. He threw a lot of strikes in this game, and that's pretty much all you can ask for coming back from an injury.
Now, everyone thinks he's going to be the savior. He's going to help out the Mets rotation. He's going to be great again, and they still think of him as a superb pitcher. Do you still think, after all his injuries and his age, he can still be a great pitcher?
Well, the main problem with that is he has to be pitching. The past few years, he gets hurt every few starts and he misses a month. If he's pitching, he's going to be pretty good. He's not going to be the ace of the staff. He's not going to be in Cy Young contention. But if he's pitching, then he's going to keep the Mets in the game, which he did. He wasn't spectacular today, but that's what he did. Four runs in five innings, that's keeping them in the game. And he's not going to blow people away, but you can't ask for a shutout at this point. You just have to, as long as he's not going to carry them from this point on.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he pitched a fair game. Billy Wagner, you know, blew a save today, so that, of course, did not help the cause. And, it doesn't look good. Church is, you know, still hurt, and Johan Santana got hurt a little bit too, but I think he's okay. But the situation for the Mets right now after that sweep is not very promising right now, and, you know, there's not really much else you could say. They're playing the Diamondbacks next at Shea, so they'll be home for a little while, so hopefully that's better for them. And, Evan, you have anything else to add to the Mets?
How do you think they're going to do the rest of the season, Dan?
I think they're going to do what they've done the last year plus, which is play around 500. It really comes down to Oliver Perez and Pedro Martinez. If Pedro can stay healthy and if Perez can somehow find consistency, which he hasn't done in a while, then I think they might be a few games over 500 for the rest of the year. But I wouldn't put money on them making the playoffs with the team, how it's constructed as it is right now. If they could make a trade at the All-Star break, but they would have to give up the rest of their farm system to do it, and I don't know how much of a difference it could make.
What trade do you think they should make? Where do they need the most improvement?
If they can get a consistent, someone who can stay in the outfield and play play every day, or if they want to, if they want to make some radical changes, they can eat the rest of Delgado's contract, and maybe they could pull off a trade for Teixeira if they throw in money, and Fernando Martinez, whatever prospects they can get together to trade, because he only has the half season left. It would take something big for them to make a run, though.
So how would you critique Willie Randolph?
I don't think the manager deserves as much credit for winning and as they deserve, and I don't think they get enough blame for losing sometimes. I think Randolph's gotten too much blame for the Mets losing. Although the public clubhouse problems have been not what we expect from someone with his leadership.
We have a caller, so if you're there, we'll take you in New York. You're on the line.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. Big Met fan here, you know, originally from New York and living down the ATL, man. And, man, I can't believe what's happening with the Mets this year, man. It's really pissing me off.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think's going on?
Well, you know, right now, you know, you can't have things like Billy Wagner blowing saves like they did today, and Ryan Church is injured, and you have some guys struggling offensively, and The chemistry in the locker room certainly has been good, with players calling out other players and, you know, some disagreements with Willie Randolph. And I think the big problem really is that chemistry. And, you know, a lot of talk, like with what Evan was saying before about Pedro Martinez making a difference. Of course, the big difference is in the locker room and his leadership. So, you know, you hope that helps. But I think the big issue this year with the Mets is the chemistry.
You think they want to play for Randolph? You think these guys are just despising of Randolph right now? I'm not trying to understand. They're very talented players out there, and they're not doing the deal, man.
What are you saying, Dan?
I was going to say I don't think it's that they're not trying. I don't think it's that they're trying to get Randolph fired or something like that. It's just that they have inconsistencies with the bullpen, and they have guys in and out of the lineup with Alou and Church with the concussions, and they can't get on any kind of role because they don't have the same guys in the field every day.
I think Alou is done.
I
think he'd be a good bench player, but I think he's done. I think he's just past the point now in his age that, you know, he's going to be very susceptible to getting hurt. As far as the rest of the lineup, man, I'm really upset. Reyes, Wright, they're not playing up to their capability. They're just not doing it. And I'm hoping with Pedro back and Santana and, you know, John Main, I mean, they got some decent pitching, and they have an okay bullpen. Okay, because you never know which bullpen is showing up. But I don't know. I don't know what to expect from these guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to tell. Of course, last year there was the big collapse. I mean, I think there's, you know, besides the stuff that we know what's going on in the locker room, I think there's more stuff going on that we don't know about. I mean, I of course am not there to say what's going on, but there's something wrong with the chemistry.
Yeah, when you get swept by San Diego, you know something is not right. They can't even score runs. And they're going to have to figure something out. I think Willie Randolph needs to get a hold of his team and just they need to figure something out. Something is not right, and I think they are capable of doing a lot better.
Well, Atlanta got swept this weekend by the Phillies. So the Phillies got a pretty good lead right now, and they seem like they're pretty solid, man. Phillies got a good team, but to be able to hold it up throughout the season, man. I just hope let's wake up, smell the coffee, and get this thing rolling, man.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is it's still early on, and they did get Pedro back, and he's not looking too bad. So, you know, hopefully for the Mets, they'll be able to turn it around soon.
Yeah, it sucks about Church. He was on a roll. I mean, he was keeping I hate to say it, but, you know, he was keeping the team up, you know?
He was, and, you know, he had the concussion, and he got dizzy on the plane, and it's not a good situation for him, but there's still
plenty of
time.
It's just like the Mets' luck, though. It's just like the Mets' luck right now, though. You know, they seem to have the players. They trade for the good players. And, man, it all just seems like they just freaking bust, man. It's just very depressing.
Yes, it is. It's depressing being a Mets fan. That's why I'm a Yankee fan.
Yeah.
But lately, Yankees haven't been doing much better. But you never know. The Mets are starting off a little shaky. Ooh, Yankees started off horrible last year. So they could make a miracle.
Ah, the Yankees. Yeah. You know, I could have been a Yankee fan growing up. I don't know. I just never was into the Steinbrenner thing, man. I mean, he was such a dick. You know, I just never was into Steinbrenner.
Yeah, Steinbrenner, he's some character, and now his sons took over, and they seem to be just like their dad, and, you know, they have very interesting ways of handling their matters, but seems to work. They're very successful over the Steinbrenner reign, and but, you know, the Mets front office is not a lot different when you see over the past few years. They've been going out and getting the big prospects.
Yeah, they're just not putting it together. They're not putting it together. I mean, they got to put it together, man. I mean, got the talent, man. They really do. I mean, Delgado sucks. Beltran sucks. I mean, they're not doing it. They're not playing the game, man. You know, these guys got so much potential. I could see Delgado declining a little bit because, you know, he's getting a little older. He's getting a little slower. But Beltran, he's still making big bucks. He's still a young guy. I just don't understand what his deal is, man. And, you know, they got the L Mets, you know, going. I mean, all the Spanish guys on the team, so they all should be talking to each other and, you know, trying to work together. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it at all.
They do have the oldest team in baseball, and they knew going into the season the injuries were going to be a problem. They have Delgado with the wrist problems, Alou with the everything problems. Pedro has a long injury history. They have a lot of guys who they couldn't really expect to stay healthy, and Castillo also. They were really depending on a lot of guys that weren't dependable. And Beltran has, I think, his knee problems from the spring training might still be lingering. Hasn't become public. He hasn't really missed too much time with it. But
what do you think of them going after Teixeira?
I don't know if they have the guys to do it. I don't think they have the talent in the minor leagues to draw Atlanta's interest, because Atlanta is contending. They're not trying to sell off all their veteran parts and shed salary. They're trying to win the division this year. If Teixeira was in a team that wasn't going anywhere, then I'd say the Mets could give some prospects and money, and then they might be able to get it done. But there's an outside chance if the Braves, you know, take a turn for the worse and start falling off, but I don't think they have a good shot to get him.
Well, yeah. Thank you, sir, very much for your call, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay, man, I'll be listening.
All right. So, again, thanks for the call, and let's continue on here with Dan. And, you know, with that call, we did get a lot of Mets discussion going, and our show is running a little low on time. It's set at 90 minutes, so we could go past 9 if we have to. But let's move into the New York Yankees now. And Jarvis Chamberlain made a second start today, didn't do too bad, allowed 3 runs, one of which was on a pass ball by Posada. Dan, I want to know your opinion of the move, the transitioning of Jarvis, if you agree with the fact that the Yankees have transitioned him to a starter. And then what your thoughts are so far through the first 2 starts.
I agree with the move 100% from the start. I was kind of worried even last year when they put him in the bullpen. Obviously, it worked out, but I was worried about his health never having done it before. I feel much more comfortable with his long-term future as a starter. And also, it's unquestionable how much more valuable a starter is to a team than the reliever is. If an A-thing reliever was more valuable to a team, then you would see guys like Josh Beckett and Jake Peavy in the 8th inning. You would see CC Sabathia closing, which obviously you just don't see. You see them pitching 220 innings for their team, and Chamberlain has that kind of potential to be frontline starter, one of the top 10 pitchers in the league. And
now,
you don't put that kind of pitcher in the 8th inning, in my opinion.
Yeah, but those top player pitchers may pitch to a lot of innings in a season, but only one set of every 5 games, and Jabba could make an impact in the bullpen every 2 or 3 games. And not only that, but Mariano Rivera is getting older, and Jabba could have taken his spot as a closer. You don't think that could have been better off for the Yankees than him being a starter?
Yeah, I was going to say that too, because, you know, back in the day with John Wetland and Mariano Rivera, John Wetland was the closer. Mariano Rivera set up for him. Mariano did, of course, come in as a starter, but it was Mariano as the 8th inning guy. Wetland would shut it down, and that 1-2 combination was unstoppable, and I thought that's what the Yankees had with Jabba and Mo, and then once Mo set off, Jabba could move into his role. But, yeah, Dan, what are your thoughts on that?
See, Rivera in 96 didn't have the same potential to dominate that Jabba does. Obviously, he's the most dominant reliever of all time, probably he's the best reliever of all time. But with one pitch, you can't shut down a lineup for 6 or 7, 8 innings. He just didn't have that capability, so he could only pitch one or two innings as a reliever, and that's why he's been so good. There's been concern that Jarvis won't be able. That's bad to transition him from the bullpen to the starting rotation midseason. But I don't. There's been so many guys who have done it in the history of baseball. I don't think that's a problem. And pitching six or seven innings every 5 days, even taking into account that the eighth inning is more has a greater impact on the game, the six or seven innings every 5 days is more valuable than one inning every 2 or 3 days.
Now, I can see a lot of people thinking that Jabba should become a starter, but do you think that now was the right time to do it, when the Yankees really lack other relievers to fill in for him?
I thought they did rush it. I thought if they waited 2 or 3 more weeks to stretch him out and maybe make the transition a little longer, it would have been better. Obviously, his first start didn't go so well with the three walks in 2 1/3 innings, or however many it was. If they gave him more time to work on his other pitches, his curveball, his changeup, then he would have been better off. But transitioning mid-season, had they done it over a long period of time, wouldn't have been. Really doesn't have any negatives, in my opinion.
And now, do you think that they're doing it the right way, the transition? Do you think they should have put him down in the minors, or do you think they're doing it the right way, letting the other team know his pitch count, and then you have starts like against Toronto, and you know he's only going to be in for 60 pitches, and they just work the counts, and he was gone in the third inning?
I think what they should have done is build him up one inning at a time. You know, start with two, and then go to 3, 4, 5, and then when he gets to 5, send him down to the minor leagues for 2 weeks. Let him make 3 starts there, get him up to 6 innings at about 90 pitches, 100 pitches, and then bring him back up. That wouldn't have been detrimental to the team. The team is not so dependent on him that they can't afford to not have him for 2 weeks. If they're that dependent on him, then they don't really deserve to make the playoffs.
Now, you would completely disagree if they were to decide, you know, I know you wanted to give him an extra 2 or 3 weeks to transition, but what if you gave him the extra year? What if next year in spring training you start to transition him and he was a starter next year? I mean, you would be completely opposed waiting another year?
That would be better. That would be better than keeping him in the bullpen forever, but I don't think that's the best way to do it, because this year he's not going to get enough innings as a reliever. The absolute most he would throw as a reliever is, let's say, 90, 95. And last year he threw 120, 125 as a starter and in the bullpen combined. And to be a full-time starter in the major leagues, you need to be able to throw at least 175, 180 innings over the course of a season. And had he only thrown 90 this year, he wouldn't have been able to do that safely next year.
Now, do you think that the Yankees have been throwing away this season to build up a starting rotation and a pitching rotation for the future?
I think if they were throwing it away, they wouldn't have signed Pettit back for as much money as they did, and they wouldn't have kept all of the veterans on the team. I think that they're definitely going to be a second-half team. They're tied for third place right now. They're 1 game over .500. At this time last year, they were like 8 or 9 games under .500, and they still came back to win the wild card. I think, so far, everything this year has pretty much been a worst-case scenario. Hughes and Kennedy are still winless, and they're both hurt and been ineffective. I think, considering everything that's gone wrong, it's a very good sign that they're 500, 1 game over .500 right now.
Now, speaking of Hughes, you know, Evan and I were talking a little bit before the show, going over some injuries and suspensions, and we came across Carl Pavano's name. And do you feel, you know, Hughes got hurt last year, he got hurt again this year, do you maybe fear a little bit that Phil Hughes could become the Carl Pavano who had all the hype built up and then he's always hurt?
Well, you have to remember that Phil Hughes is 20, just turned 21 years old. Actually, 21, just turned 22. He's expected to be hurt. And he hasn't had an arm injury yet. That's the main thing. Last year's hamstring injury was a fluke. He did it on a curveball and just popped it somehow, and then he extended that injury with the ankle and rehabbing. If he hurt his arm, then that would be a concern. Pavano's injury problem started when he had the problem with it. He had a rotator cuff tendonitis, and then he had bone spurs in his elbow, and then a car crash. Of course, I guess the car crash is a fluke also, but I would be worried if Hughes was having arm problems. But he's never had an arm problem in his life, and he has relatively stress-free pitching motion. I don't really think he's going to be Carl Pavano. A lot of young guys his age are getting hurt in the minor leagues, and you just don't hear about it.
So the Yankees, after winning today, are over 500, and that's been tough for them this season. Do you think that finally the lineup is coming around? Finally, Posada's back, A-Rod's back, and do you think that the Yankees are finally going to start playing well and winning a lot more games?
Yeah, well, now they have no excuses for not hitting. Before, the excuse was that A-Rod and Posada were out. Then it was when A-Rod came back, the excuse was that Posada was out. So now that they're all back, today's lineup was actually only the third time all year that they've had all of those nine guys in the lineup at the same time. The first was opening day, and the second was, I think, April 25th, sometime in late April. So this is the lineup that last year scored like a million runs in July and had like an average like nine runs a game or something. So I think if they're going to go, I think they could go on a run very soon.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Giambi's been hot and Damon's been hot. But speaking of that lineup where the third time this year, go ahead.
I was going to say Giambi's batting his last 150 plate appearance, he's batting .330 with like 15 walks or something. He's just on absolute tear right now. 12 home runs also.
It's the mustache.
Yes, it's the mustache. And I heard Joe Girardi's growing a mustache also to support him and Damon.
So now who do you think is wearing the gold thong in the team now?
I guess it has to be Giambi, maybe. Actually, no, Damon probably wore it yesterday when he went 6-for-6. That's quite a day.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about Joe Girardi for a second, because as you said, you know, it was the third time with the full lineup and whatnot, but he loves to give players days off. And the other day, Giambi was sitting out. I know he had a little bit of a foot injury, but I don't think it affected him that much. And Posada had come back, and they could have had the full lineup, but Wilson Benamit played instead because he wanted to give, I believe, Matsui had the day off or something. I mean, he's constantly giving guys days off. What are your thoughts on Joe Girardi? It kind of makes me angry because he keeps sitting guys every once in a while, and I don't think it's necessary for him to do that.
It is a relatively old team, and with Torrey, they would consistently, the starters would consistently lead the league in games played, and then they would fall apart in the playoffs as we saw the last few years. I don't know if that was the direct reason that they were tired, but maybe it's just a coincidence. He's not really resting guys like A-Rod and Jeter and Cano. He's resting the guys who are older with, like, who are nicked up, who have some kind of nagging injury, like Giambi, and Matsui with his knees, and Damon with who knows what, and Abreu occasionally, and Posada has that shoulder problem. I don't think he's not going crazy with resting, although he's probably just worried about later in the year. Might be to a fault. I'm not really sure. We can't really judge that now.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably better for the future. It's just something that makes me really angry that, I mean, you don't need, I mean, he seems to love Wilson Benamit. He pinch hit Wilson Benamit the other day, and I know his number's 3-for-4 versus Mahe or whatever, but, I mean, you're pinch hitting Wilson Benamit when you could have pinch hit Posada in that same exact spot. Posada pinch hit later in the game, but I was like, going crazy that Wilson Benamit had hit despite the numbers. I mean,
well, he is on the team. You are going to play him occasionally.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
You need to get these players ready. Instead of him sitting on the bench, he could be better off in the AAA. If he's going to be on the bench, you might as well play him so he is ready if you ever do need him.
Yeah, Wilson Benamit doesn't really have much of a role on this team. They'd be better served with a speedier guy like Alberto Gonzalez who can play a bunch of positions, but I guess they want him to just be playing every day in the minor leagues, not sitting on the bench and not developing.
Yeah. Or they could use another pitcher in the bullpen. And about pitching in the bullpen, what do you think the Yankees have to do this season in order to better their bullpen?
In all honesty, I don't think they should do anything. Within a month, I think by the end of July, let's say, I think the Yankees are going to have, you're probably going to laugh at me, but I think the Yankees are going to have one of the better bullpens in baseball. They have all kinds of talent in AAA right now that they're just waiting for an opportunity to come up. They're probably going to release Hawkins relatively soon, probably within a month or two. And
so you think in a month or two from now, they're going to go from one of the worst bullpens other than Mariano Rivera to one of the best?
No, I think that within a month, you'll see some of the guys come up. and then after by let's say by the end of July, the bullpen they have will be one of the better bullpens that by the end of let's say the season. By the time the playoffs come around, the guys in the bullpen in August will be among the better bullpens in the American League.
Wow. I have to say that I am so happy to hear you say the Yankees will probably release Hawkins for two reasons. One, he's a terrible garbage pitcher. And two, I was talking to you before the season started, and you said that you liked the signing. So
yes, I was obviously completely wrong about that.
And I tried to tell you that he was a terrible pitcher, and you didn't believe me. But now I'm happy that that's out there, and you said it on air.
Although, if they kept Vizcaino instead of Hawkins, they wouldn't have been able to draft Jeremy Bleich. So, they got Hawkins. Not that that completely makes up for it, but Vizcaino, I think, is hurt anyway.
All right, so I guess you could use that to justify it if you'd like.
Yeah, there were some Yankee fans that wanted to keep Vizcaino, but he's faced 12 batters the entire year. He's pitched 1 1/3 innings this year. It's not like he would have been the savior and Hawkins is terrible and they would have been great with Vizcaino. They would have been even in worse shape had they kept Vizcaino.
Well, not necessarily, because instead of LaTroy Hawkins giving up runs, I think I'd rather LaTroy Hawkins on the bench right now than pitching.
That's a good point. Well, Hawkins is pitching pretty much in blowouts. He's not really – they're not putting him in instead of Mariano or Chamberlain. They're putting him in, you know, a fifth inning of a 10-1 game.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, that pretty much sums up the Yankees and the Mets. So, Dan, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate it. And hopefully we can call on you again soon.
Okay, I'll be here.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, so let's wrap up the show now. Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan is a sports radio show created for informing the public of the latest sports news and insights. Our show is broadcast over the internet through blogtalkradio.com from Jericho, New York. The views, comments, and statements of our interviews and guests do not necessarily reflect that of the host. We do not also claim ownership of any material used on the sports show or on the website, including musical beds, voiceovers, instrumentations, effects, team logos, league, and team names otherwise stated. If there's any material you wish to remove from our show, please email us at sports7withmarkandevan@yahoo.com. Also, I have to get it out there, myebimedia.com is the network. Our show is a part of it, and it has been completely refurbished, completely renovated. It's all new. There's blogs, there's new pages, there's a ton of new things on myedimedia.com. It is truly the new myedimedia.com. Cut it some slack, still in a little bit of a beta stage, but I mean, you can read I actually am the Yankees beat writer for myedimedia, and I haven't written anything this weekend, but every weekday I will be writing an article on the New York Yankees. So be sure to check that out. That's at myedimedia.com. We also made a couple of changes to the Sports Heaven website. We actually had to make a whole new page. The subscribe page used to be at the bottom of our homepage, but we made a new page to subscribe because there was a bunch of new ways to do it. You could, of course, subscribe to our feed, to your favorite website, MyYahoo, or iTunes. We're also in the iTunes podcast directory under Sports Heaven. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter. This is all at sportsheavenwithmarkandevan.webs.com. But the new thing, you can now subscribe to Sports Heaven text alerts. Now, you won't receive any alerts automatically, so if you do text it, don't worry about a subscription. You're not going to get constant text messages at all. It's just to check up on our next show. So there's actually two things you could do. You could text New York Sports. That's You could text NY Sports to, wow, I am completely blanking on the number, so if you give me a second, but what you would do is you would text New York Sports to a number that I will tell you in a second, and what that will do will give you a menu of three options, and those three options are next show and
previous
show and news. You can find previous shows and news, And what you would do is you would reply with the number 1, and that would get you to talk to read about our next show. The number is 44636. So if you text NY Sports to 44636, you'll get a menu of next show, our past show, and news. Our next show will give you a little rundown of our next show. The past show will tell you what you missed and how you could listen to it, which, since you're texting it, you could listen to it through your phone by calling 1-212-404-5633. And then news is if there's any news such as this. Like, in the future, if we have any other new way of subscribing, that would be on the news page. But right now, there really is nothing on the news. And then the other thing you could do is if you text Heaven Feed, that's Heaven Feed, to the same number, 44636, you will receive our latest RSS feed through text message. And again, you will not receive automatic alerts. You will not get one every week. You just have to, so you don't have to worry about texting and continue to receive it. So that is some of the new stuff going on with Sports Heaven. So we have text alerts now, and all this information could be found on our official site, which is sportsheavenwithmarkandevin.webs.com. That's Mark with a K. And that wraps up our show. Tune in next week, same time, same place, same great show. It's Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan live every Sunday at a Jericho. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Brandoff. See you next week.
We leave you with Sweet Caroline, Neil Diamond.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it. But then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Touching warm, reaching out, touching me. Good job.